batter up. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 76 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my co-hosts, Linda Serovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
And we are also joined this week by a very special guest. We have Disha Thosar on. Hello, Disha.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Disha, for those of you who don't know her, most of you probably do, but for those of you who don't, Disha is the Mets beat reporter for the New York Daily News. She previously covered the Red Sox, Yankees, and Mets for MLB.com, and she has her BA in journalism from Penn State. And we're very excited to have her on. So, Disha, for our listeners who don't know you, tell them a little bit more about you. Like, what made you gravitate toward journalism as a career path, and what made you want to cover baseball?
Sure. So I kind of grew up watching baseball with my dad and my brother most nights. And I remember as early as like 4 years old, I started asking them really annoying questions. Is my brother's like 4 years older than me, so he knew all of it by then. But once I realized, you know, these questions were kind of like annoying them, as I was doing a good job by like asking what a walk is, what a strikeout is, and like super basic four-year-old stuff. That was basically when I was like, oh, I want to keep doing this. So I realized I was good at questioning then. And then I always loved reading and writing. But I wanted to just kind of do the beat as long as I can remember. Cause once I asked, you know, how do people do this for a living? Like everyone that I saw on TV, just kind of standing by guys' locker rooms and things like that, was like, oh wow, they get to do this every day of their lives. So as soon as I went to college, basically at Penn State, I took journalism classes there, did some broadcast classes, and was lucky enough to land an interview with Bill Hill of MLB.com. And he offered me an internship covering the Red Sox. And that was David Ortiz's retirement year. So it was definitely like getting my feet underneath me. Did not have even time for that in 2016, but it was a good start into the industry for sure.
Who did you root for growing up?
I actually had a split household, so it was Mets and Yankees. My brother.
I think there's something really healthy about growing up with that kind of conflict.
Exactly. My brother and my dad were more Yankees, and then I had a grandpa and an uncle that were Mets, and we saw them all the time. So as early as I can remember, I saw both, and Daryl Strawberry is my favorite for the reason that he played for both, and guys like David Cone. So it's funny that it ended up happening that way.
Yeah, we are. I am a split household as well, so I can relate to that. But I mean, I feel like it's my childhood was overwhelmingly Mets because my dad's the biggest baseball fan in my family. And he's a Mets fan, so that's why I'm a Mets fan. But right. My mom is from the Bronx, and so her entire side of the family are all Yankees fans. Oh, and even my dad's side of the family, which is the bigger side, has a Yankees like branch in it. Like I have one aunt and uncle who are Yankees fans on that side, too. So they're the black sheep in a lot of ways, but
it's no wonder you're a geneticist with all of this, you know, variety.
So yeah, true. gonna study the genetics of fandom.
And I am a Mets only household, but I live in like the border of Washington Heights and Inwood, so I am surrounded on all sides by extremely intense Yankee fandom. So you know, osmosis it comes in.
You've gotten a taste of it too.
I'm a split household, but my mom's from Philly. So we were Mets and Phillies.
Wow.
Yeah. My poor mom was kind of outnumbered.
So Disha, this has been a whirlwind offseason for the Mets. They got the new owner and immediately like traded for one of the biggest stars of the game. And then there have also been on like the less positive side, a number of recent stories detailing sexual harassment involving ex-GM Jared Porter and ex-manager Mickey Callaway. And you wrote an incredible personal column in the aftermath of Porter's firing. What has it been like for you as a woman in the industry covering the team, watching all of this happening? Do you think this is going to be kind of a reckoning moment for baseball?
So it definitely hasn't been easy basically since January 19th. I don't think I'll ever even get the date kind of erased out of my mind. And then February 1st was when the Mickey story dropped. It's just been tough to kind of even come to terms with that I could have been talking to Porter, who, you know, seemingly would have been great for my male colleagues and then would have been horrible for me. And just reflecting on how often those differences even happen now is kind of what rocked me, at least over the last 3 months, and brought really, really ugly, like, trauma things to light. And the only way I could even cope with it was by writing that column. I mean, as soon as I know the Porter news came out super late on like a Monday, and it was like 11 p.m. But as soon as I read it, I was like, wow, I cannot go to sleep tonight. And I just started kind of jotting down things that I was thinking, going in the column, stayed up basically the whole night writing that piece. And I worked on it in the morning with my editor for a few hours, and then it went live at like 10. So that whole, I mean, that whole 24 hours was just really emotional for me. And like I said, it brought up a lot of things that I think women have to deal with, and the realization of that it's not going away anytime soon. So not even to be cynical about it in that way, because I'm definitely a glass half full person, but just in the sense that there are so many changes that need to happen that are not going to happen overnight. And it's really nice that, you know, it's being brought up to light now, and people are just now recognizing how tough it can be for women in this industry, and not even industry. Like, I think Sandy nailed it on the head when he said, you know, this is something that happens in society as a whole, even though I think he may have meant it as more of a deflection, but he had a point that that column, I think, resonated with everyone. I remember my mom like sending it to some of her coworkers that have nothing to do with baseball or sports. So I think it shows a lot of how much work still has to be done, but I guess it's the very beginning baby steps of a reckoning.
Yeah, I think that, like, even women who aren't in sports, I think every woman who's been in a male-dominated industry, or not even necessarily a male-dominated industry, just, like, yep, been in any sort of industry, has, like, experienced some level of what is described. And it's hard not to, you know, especially for someone like you, like, these are your colleagues that are experiencing this. And it's, like, hard, it's really hard to see the details come out and realize, like, you know, this could have easily been me, or, like, I've experienced things like this, things adjacent to this. And people, like, we're just trying to do our jobs, you know. Yep, exactly. Shouldn't have to deal with this every day.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, that's the onus is kind of on women now, especially to talk about it and to fix it and, you know, just move the needle. But really, it's not going to move until, you know, more of our male colleagues say or do something or step up, at least. So until that happens, I think that can be a major step. And I think it can be as simple as male colleagues calling each other out. When that happens, I think I would be super impressed and surprised. But until then, it's kind of, you know, in this baby steps moment.
It was a deflection by Sandy. What did you make of his press conferences?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of nuance to be had about what Sandy has done over the last few months. And starting with, you know, his first press conference the day that they fired Porter, he didn't have to do that. And I mean, ever since, there are very few people that have even stepped up and taken questions like that. And just to be, you know, brutally honest and being open to the fact that he might get dragged, and he did get dragged for some of the things he said. So I think it was, in many ways, brave of him to just simply do what not even other, GM in his, not in his case, but people in his position in front offices aren't doing that enough. And in that sense, props to him, credit to him. And in other ways, like I said, I think a lot of it was, you know, band-aids and deflections, and we're going to improve the vetting process, but we're not going to exactly tell you how, you know, and things like that. I think they have to be way, way, way more transparent and way more honest if they really mean it. And I get that, you know, it's only been however many months, so in my opinion, it's not always the time to kind of step on his neck with these details, but in due time, right? So that's what, you know, we have, the season is long enough to kind of save the bullets in that sense. So I think he's still very much on the clock for making changes.
Yeah, I agree with that. And what was your reaction to him saying, because the thing that stuck out to me was when he said, when he talked recently about how he in the improved vetting process, they are going to ask women like within the organization about hires. And I was, I don't know, my reaction to that was kind of like two sides of the coin. Like on one hand, I was like, okay, like they've clearly taken this to heart and they're thinking about these things and that's good. But on the other hand, it's like, it's not these women's job to just like, you know, do this for you without any extra compensation whatsoever outside of their like normal job duties. So yeah, yeah. That was interesting to me.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with you on that, and that, you know, it's very apparent that they're thinking about it and this is something that's on their minds when they make a new hire. So in that sense, that's what, you know, we wanted all along. Depending on who he asks, I think maybe now is not the time to press him again on it, but hopefully he just, you know, will have a better sense. But a lot of that is just placing hope in kind of a blind place. If he's not, like I said, going to be transparent about it. So I asked him in that press conference, like, who are these women that you're even going to be talking to? And he said, sometimes it could be a third party. Sometimes it could be in the organization. And I understand he has to respect, you know, their privacy as well. So there's only as far as he could go, but it seemed like more of his, you know, let's just put a block on this for now and you know, get back to it at a later time. And I think he has a lot on his plate. And I know that from even talking to everyone in the front office, is just, they're impressed with the energy that he even has for someone who's 74 or about to turn 74. So I think in that sense, he's maybe doing the best he can, and that's obviously not good enough. But it's also, you know, he didn't ask for to be placed in this role. It's almost like he needs to hire someone to handle it, you know, if he can't do it himself.
Yeah, and that seems kind of typical for how they handle a situation like this. I mean, you know, we've seen other teams deal with kind of fallout from, I mean, I'm just gonna like crudely refer to it as PR scandals. And it doesn't, you know, I think about like, oh, that absolute rat bastard's name is escaping my mind. Brandon Taubman, the Astros guy. And it felt when the other team's GMs are talking about these situations, it sort of sounds to a far outsider like myself that they're all kind of in the same general category of being sort of trying to dodge responsibility and just give assurances without specificities.
Oh, 100%.
It's really an MLB wide thing in your experience.
Yeah. And I think it's also a male thing. I think, you know, if the Mets are dodging responsibility and that's the perception, it's because in a way that's the case. They don't really want to explain their actions for things that have happened in the past. And even, I mean, compared to how the Indians are handling it, I think the Mets look really good. And, you know, Tito saying this isn't the time to talk about it is the exact opposite of what he should be doing. So in that sense, you know, it's, the Mets are doing something different. And I think definitely the perception of it, of dodging responsibility and things like that is a problem, no doubt. But I think if they are at least thinking about it and changing their ways and their vetting process, like they said they are, and to the extent of, you know, talking about it with other people in the front office, I believe them in that way. So I think that's definitely what matters to them and what should matter overall, except to the perception, which I think they have to handle by having, you know, a better PR staff. And, you know, some of that can just be fixed by a better communication.
Yeah. And it's also worth pointing out once again, we're gonna beat this drum every week. Sorry, everyone. But Mickey Callaway still has a job.
Yep.
It is March 15th
yep.
as we record this. Just reminding everyone, you know, I mean, there's an investigation. It is supposedly ongoing. We will see what happens. Although additional details of Mickey Callaway's conduct have come out since the initial Athletic story, and still no word on how the MLB investigation is going, as far as we know. As far as you know, Disha, is there no word on that?
Yeah, the last I've heard, the investigation is going. I've heard it's taken this long because they're being super respectful to the people that were involved in the story and the women that stepped up. And obviously the flip side of that that bothers me is that he is still employed and paid, like you said, while they take their time. So it all kind of comes down to Mickey denying any wrongdoing, and that's why this is even happening in the first place. But for the Angels, the story itself should be enough. And I think that at this point they're just fearing some sort of, you know, lawsuit from Mickey's end, which is just completely ridiculous. Because I think, as he should know, and now that the world knows, is that the more investigating they do, the more crap keeps popping up, like the second follow-up to the Athletic story. So really the Angels should have nothing to fear. If they should just, you know, want to move on from this smear on their organization.
Yeah.
And no one ever sends dick pics once.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, the one time I did that, the one time, darn.
And then gets a nickname, dick pic from the one time.
Yeah. Well, it's singular, dick pic. So.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
As Steve Cohen would say, anyway, back to the Mets. Had to get that dig in on Steve Cohen's Twitter. Since you started covering the team, Disha, what has been like sort of your favorite moment on the beat? Is there like a particular story you're really proud of or had a really fun time writing? Is there a particular player you like really like talking to? Is there a particular moment you remember? Like, what sticks out during your tenure on the Mets beat so far for you?
Speaking of Mickey, the story that I'm definitely most proud of, just for all of the kind of aspects and the situation that went into it, was when he really like tore one out at Tim Keeley in the Cubs clubhouse in 2019. And just for the reason of simply like, it was a slow day. There was no story besides them just continuing to suck in the month of June. And then, you know, Mickey yells at Tim, and I'm standing 2 feet away from him when all of this happens. And I mean, within him yelling at him, and then like 5 minutes later, we're like, as a beat, running up the stairs to the press box to make calls, to write the story. So I'm proud of the way that story came out, but I'm also proud of the way of the effort that went into it, because it was my first time kind of doing something on the fly like that. But to get away from a not as depressing topic, one of the more fun stories I think that I've done was after, in 2019 also, this was their first, right before their home opener, they were coming back from Miami and they were super, super delayed. Like, they didn't get into New York till like 4 a.m. And we started asking why the next day. And it turns out that Dom needed to take a urine test for the drug tests that go on at MLB, and he just couldn't supply. so he had to drink, like, I forget if it was water, he was trying anything, I think orange juice. And I was dying at that story. I was like, this needs to be
Hashtag relatable.
Right. And the whole team was like, kind of like, damn, like, come on, like, just drink already. Just get it out. Like, we want to go back to New York. And, like, poor guys, like, just trying to go. So I thought that was like, and my first year, like, classic meds. So those are definitely from one serious end to a more funny end.
How was it covering them last year with, you know, everything that was going on, like with Zoom and all of that? How did everybody adapt?
Yeah, no, it's still very much like that. I think being at spring training now is great, and that's already better than last year, but in many ways it's exactly the same, because we're still not allowed in the clubhouse. It's very sterile. I mean, even if, you know, I want, like, one of the people that I always enjoyed talking to in a very, you know, off the record sense of just, oh, what are you doing today? It's an off day, was Luis Rojas. And we would just catch up during spring training, actually, just on the field whenever I passed him. And he's just so easy to talk to. And now it's like, we're so far away. Like, I'm on the concourse. Like, the most we can do is like a very far wave. And even then, like, I'm not sure if he's waving at me or what's going on. So it hasn't been great in the sense that, like, it's just very sterile. And the line of, you know, media reporter to player is way more apparent than just, you know, person to person, human to human. So hopefully things can change this year as fans start to get into stadiums. They should at least revisit our regulations too. And I think it would really benefit the Mets this year with just how many personalities they have on the team.
And speaking of, you know, since you are in spring training, I don't know, with like binoculars or something, what do you expect out of this team? Like, what storylines have developed? Or, you know, like you said, they have a lot of fun players. Like, do you think Lindor has like made a difference? I know it's still early, but like, just what have been your observations so far in spring?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot that's been made about their camaraderie, and I think for good reason that they're really a close-knit group and are always having fun. Lindor has been a leader since day one, from what I've seen at least. And like you said, it has been early, so I'm in the group that at least they would need to face some kind of adversity to, you know, really show their true colors and show if they're as good as they look on paper. But in terms of just storylines, I think things to watch out for is definitely Diaz. If he can stay as tremendous as he looks right now, I think that would be a huge help for a bullpen that some would say is kind of shaky. And personally, I'm rooting for Betances to do well. And he has his moments, I think, especially in spring. But if he's healthy, from what I've heard about him, at least with the Yankees, is that he only gets better. So I think one of the things, you know, you don't have to worry about his lineup, but if you have to worry about anything, it should be the bullpen. So pegging for those two guys to be huge, and then things should hopefully fall into place for them.
Is DeGrom look as good in person as he does on TV?
Yeah. Woo! No, he's scary. He's scary to watch. I mean, that other night, like when he was touching 101, and I know MLB said one, scout said 102. I literally had goosebumps watching those first three innings. And like, that doesn't happen often, especially because I just watch baseball every day. But with DeGrom pitching, it's just like insane. I mean, yeah, I feel grateful to have this job every time he pitches, as crazy as that is.
Yeah. Every time you think he can't find another gear, he finds another gear. It's insane.
Right. What if he just gets better forever? I mean,
if it never stops.
It's been, you know, 7 years with roughly, I mean, there was a couple of blips here and there where he had like a 3.4 ERA. Oh, I know. But like, almost consistently, like, better and better every year. Like, what if he doesn't stop? We don't know if he's gonna stop. There's no precedent for Jacob DeGrom.
He could be like that, the Tom Brady of baseball.
Yeah, for real. It's like that scene in Mean Girls. The limit does not exist. The limit does not exist. That would be pretty incredible. Disha, what is your sense on, speaking of Lindor, so I thought of this because Linda brought up Lindor. What is your sense on, because we're all obviously on the edge of our seats with negotiations having started, but not having heard anything about it since they just said they've started negotiating. So like, what is your, if you had to put like a percent likelihood, and I know that this would just be based on like your own personal opinion and not based on like, you know, any like inside info, we're not going to make you divulge that, but unless you want to. But like, if you just had to like put a percent likelihood on him extending with the Mets, what do you think it would be at this stage?
I guess I would say 75-80 range percent likelihood. Just because at this point I would be super surprised if they weren't able to agree on something. You know, I think it would take a huge disagreement between the two sides for something not to happen if discussions have already started, and they have. There's your insider info. But yeah, I think it might take a little bit, just because they're not, you know, super, super, super in a rush in this moment in time. But the fact that they've started and they, you know, seem to be on the same page with each other should be hopeful for Mets fans.
Yeah, no news is good news, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because I feel like if they were far apart, we'd start hearing some leaks, I'm guessing, from his agent or otherwise. But yeah, amazing having you, Slack. Got my hopes up too much because we were talking and they were like, ooh, today's the off day. Wouldn't today be the perfect day to announce it? And then once again, another day goes by and I'm like, you guys got my hopes up again. Come on.
Like, what if they had planned for today to be the day, but then they all overslept from daylight saving?
Yeah.
Omar said they went out to dinner, I guess, on SNY.
Oh, I missed that.
Did anyone get the salmon?
The magic salmon.
That's the thing, because I know last year a whole bunch was made, or maybe 2 years ago, about the Yankees giving Garrett Cole this expensive bottle of wine that eventually won him over. So it'd be funny if the Mets are doing something like that right now for Lindor. It's like, what do you need? We'll give it to you.
Got to get some of that Tom Seaver wine from Taiwan Walker over to Francisco Lindor.
Well, the Hove signed because of the sandwich. Was it May?
I think it was.
Yeah, Trevor May. I think he had already signed, and he was just doing a physical. The deal was already out, and he came to Queens and then did the physical, and then got the sandwich, and he was like, "Yeah, I belong here."
But they're not in Queens. We can't get Lindor a sandwich. What do you get him in Florida?
Not there's a sandwich.
Nothing for him in Port St. Lucie. Yeah, that's for sure.
Chipotle.
Well, I have to ask this. You tweeted a video about them celebrating the 27 consecutive outs, and it ended up getting blowing up. It went super viral. Did you expect that? And you said how fun this team is, and I think that kind of just played into it. So, but did you expect that when you hit tweet?
I definitely did not expect that. No, I knew Mets Twitter would have fun with that, and would go appropriately viral kind of within the contents of Mets Twitter. But I think it ended up being, it goes to show kind of how crazy the last year has been, that people ate that up, because I think it's just been so slow on the sports front that, teammates are actually touching each other, and like, not in a weird way, but like, jumping up and down. And like, that's the thing about it. It was just like, one really quick moment of, wow, things are normal, and the Mets are, in some people's eyes, just being the Mets, and in others it's like, well, they're just having fun, if you actually knew what they were doing. So no, definitely did not expect it to go that viral. But at the same time, I really try not to pay attention to that stuff, because it's like, once it's out there, it's out there. So I think it goes to show how fun they're having as a team, that they were even up for that. But I know just from looking at it that the drill it looked super exhausting. They were at it. It was hot that day for a while. They were like, okay, two more outs. Like, then they kept going, and I think the celebration was warranted. The fact that I was able to get it on video, even better.
Who was involved? I need to know who was involved. Was JD involved? Because everybody knows I love JD.
JD was involved. Yes. Yeah, he was there. Lindor, Pete was in it. McNeil was in it. Conforto was the one that made the fake final out catch. He like leaped over, pretend. Well, he did leap, but he, as he leapt, pretended to catch the ball over the wall. And then that was like the moment that everyone was like, yes, it's caught, like, we won. And I think it was funny. It goes to show every single player on that field bought into the celebration and like sprinted to the dirt. So it's not, we were talking about how if this was like last year and Cespedes was in spring training, like, he definitely would have dipped. We were just like, all right, peace, I'm not running in there, or something. But it just goes to show that this whole team is like totally all in, at least at the moment.
And what coach was it, because he said like, get ready to celebrate, so it seemed like it was something they were planning.
Yeah, no, I don't know if that's one of my questions, but it was Tony Tarasco.
Okay.
And that's the other thing about these Zooms, is that it's obviously not as easy to get everyone quickly, but he did say celebrate at the end of the drill, and it looked like that was definitely not something that was planned. But also people are crediting Rojas for it, because he just wanted to make sure that as tough as the drill was, that it was also fun. So trying to get to the bottom of exactly whose idea it was to celebrate like that. So once I find out, hopefully it will be a story soon.
Oh, good. Yeah, we definitely need follow up on that.
yeah, for sure.
And the team chemistry that you sort of witnessed, like, with that, and you said like that they're all in, like, is this team like as fun to cover as they are to root for? And is it like really genuine, like the like team chemistry that we're seeing with this team, that compared to teams past, it just feels like a really special group on the fan side. And I'm just wondering if covering them, you see the same thing.
Yeah, no, I for sure see it from what I can see. I think this is, it really sucks for fans that that reporters are not allowed in the clubhouse this year because almost, you know, all of the regulars are personalities and they actually want to talk to reporters too. Like Lindor is always, you know, very open and willing to talk to us. So that's why I keep saying, hopefully, you know, at some point, even if, you know, if the Mets get hot during the regular season, that can be helpful. But as much as I can see from the field and like I post in videos and stuff is basically as much of the camaraderie and stuff I get to see too, because we're just so restricted this year. But from what I've seen and how they talk about each other and with each other, it's just super relaxed and carefree. And I think that goes a lot into them just taking it very much like, okay, this is a game and we're here to have fun. And then we're also talented. So we're just going to make it happen. And at the same time, they care. I think every, you know, guy on that team that cares about winning to an extent that's like super competitive, not as much as DeGrom, but close. So I think that helps in that when you have those two things that are kind of an equal balance, and fun and competitiveness can go a long way. So now all they have to do is keep it together in the regular season.
Yeah.
Were you there for any Guillorme at that?
Oh, the Guillorme at bat. Yeah, that was funny. It was crazy because basically by every pitch that he fouled off after, like, I remember looking at, like, pitch 12 or 13, and that's when everyone was starting to get loud. And it was like, okay, well, if this goes to 15, it's fun, but it might be a tweet, but it's not going to be anything else. And then he just keeps going. And it was insane. Like I'm seeing him Jordan Hicks dial it up to 100 and Guillorme's just falling it off. And then the crowd was going crazy. People were banging against the wall. And that was the loudest he could probably get for how many fans are in there. I think it's like 1400 fans or something. Not even. Yeah. So it's like 20% capacity. So it got loud. It was crazy. And I think that's going to be the highlight of spring training.
Is there anyone who looks really like maybe not the usual suspects, but who looks really locked in right now to you, who, you know, you might not expect would be having a really strong spring, but is?
I mean, when locked in, definitely Pete comes to mind, but he's, like you said, a usual suspect. I keep saying this, but I really think that, and who knows, I could be totally wrong, but I really think that JD is going to have more of a 2019 season where he broke out and people are kind of doubting him and now wanting Guillorme at third. And I think to some degree, I don't know how much of that he takes in, but that might be driving him even more, you know, to do well. So I don't know if that counts as not being a usual suspect because he is still a big name and a starter, but
we'll allow it. Holland is losing her mind right now.
No, I was gonna say, I'll take it. I will absolutely take it.
Big JD fan.
You just made Linda's night, Deisha. She's the resident JD Davis stan among all of us.
Good to know.
I just argued for him today.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that, you know, fans do still have to argue for him because I think he's almost shown enough. Besides, last year was obviously bad for everyone in baseball, so I think that has to be excused on many levels. But yeah, I think he could have a big year.
And I think with, like, people are obviously concerned about his defense, but I think I've made this point a few times. I think with Lindor at short and his range, it makes JD Davis's defense far less of a concern because the range is the big thing with him. It's not the throwing arm. It's not the things hit right at him. It's, you know, it's his range. And Lindor has the best range of, like, any shortstop in baseball. So hopefully he can cover for what JD lacks.
Yeah, I think JD too, his footwork definitely is one of those things that at least anytime he picks up grounders is something I look at to see if he always has this kind of stutter step where if he thinks he has time, then he takes, you know, two or three steps. And by that third step, it's like, just throw it, man. Like, so I think, you know, if he improves on his footwork, he has a really big power arm. But I think you're right with Lindor, you know, steps away from him, shouting things at him and yelling things in his ear, which is already what Lindor has been doing constantly. Like in the infield, if he's doing any drills, it's like, he's just always talking and giving advice. And I think that really helps with guys like JD and McNeil, who are both going to be on either end of him, just to have that little source of direction and attention and not get too bogged down in a bad play and things like that.
You know, Lindor already said that he's seen JD improve. So I'm just going to trust Lindor on that and take it.
Yeah.
Well, and I think there was an article by Puma. It might have been Puma. It just came out that said JD was playing too far back, I think, last year, and that they're trying to fix that, too, that, like, his positioning was just all wrong last year.
Yeah, that could be something, too, that goes into it, for sure.
So I'm totally calling a big JD here.
Heck yeah, Linda. Lindor also said something interesting about defensive shifting recently. He said that, like, basically he has no problem with the move that baseball is potentially making to limit shifting, testing it out in the minors first, because, you know, he wants to work on his craft. He wants to just do his thing, you know, rather than, I think he sees defensive shifting as a little bit gimmicky almost, he made it seem like. And so, Disha, what are your thoughts on baseball's, like, continued attempt to, like, test things in the minor leagues and, like, these tweaks that they're making to the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think the with the tweaks to the minor leagues, it's that whole thing is kind of what I tend to agree with. It's a good place to try it out, because if they're just going to bring it to the major leagues anyway, then we might as well see how it works first. But in regard to the shift and Lindor, I think he, you know, definitely grew up playing a certain way. And if I was Lindor, it would bother me too. If, you know, you just want to play the game and you want to call your own shots, but increasingly MLB is going in the other direction with that. And, you know, these guys can't really make their own decisions as much anymore. Like I always use this example, but the Yankees they do this the most of they'll highlight pitch sequences before even, you know, going into the game, so they already have their game plan up, and the catcher isn't at all calling the game. So then they'll also have, you know, the Mets do this too, but like cards in their pockets and hats and for positioning. And I think it's almost like, you know, it's the Pandora's out of the box, and it's like for shifts, I think might be too late. That might not be the fight that Lindor wants, but I can see why it would annoy him, why he wouldn't want to play that way.
Yeah. It makes sense. I think the stepping off and all the balk things changes are going to cause the pitchers some problems.
Yeah.
We are going to close out the show this week, like we do every week, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. So, Disha Thosar, what is your walk-off win?
My walk-off win this week is I finally have a visitor. I finally have some company coming tomorrow, actually. My boyfriend is visiting for the week in Port St. Lucie. I think he's the only person I know that actually likes this town. he just looks forward to it every year. I'm like, yeah, go crazy, go to the museum, do whatever you have to do. But it will be nice to actually have, you know, someone that I know that isn't like Tim Healy, Anthony DeComo, or, you know, Justin Toscano seeing every day. So looking forward to that.
That's awesome. Very exciting to
you
have
found
someone
who likes Port St. Lucie. I am amazed.
Same.
Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
I've been going back and forth on this one, but I think I have to land on the new trailer for the In the Heights movie dropped yesterday.
Yes.
I love In the Heights. I live in the Heights. and it's, I mean, I'm going to say something super controversial, which is, I think it's actually like it's a better show than Hamilton. I think the music in Hamilton just got to another level that Lin-Manuel Miranda wasn't quite there when he was doing In the Heights, but it is the best show. It has so much heart, and it is like this really extremely accurate portrayal of this neighborhood that I love. And I've had the original cast album on repeat for the last like 2 days straight. My kids are tired of it, which just wait till the movie comes out, y'all. But they're gonna love it too, because they get really excited about that kind of thing. And like, there's a shot of the one train, and Thomas loves trains, and like, you know, my daughter, her favorite music has always been reggaeton, and it just, I'm so excited for it. It was supposed to come out last year, and among the many things that were terrible about last year, In the Heights getting bumped for a full 12 months was up there. So I'm super excited. Still have 3 months to go. So get ready for another walk-off win in June. But yeah, so check out the new trailer. We will link it. It is really fun. It's going to be a really great movie.
So is it like the original cast or is it just like...
No. I mean, they're all like, everyone's too old now.
Well, because they did that with Rent. So I'm like, yeah.
No, he was, I mean, because Lin himself played kind of the main character, Usnavi, in the original show. And then, but now he plays like the old guy selling ice cream. Like it's, everybody's too old. So yeah, because God, the show must've been like 12 years old by now. But yeah, so but there are a lot of the same, like some, a lot, there's, he's not the only person who's reprising a role in some way. And like a lot of the other people involved also, you know, were in Hamilton at one point or another. And yeah, it's Anthony Ramos is the guy you want to watch. He's amazing. And yeah, it's a great cast. I'm so excited.
Maggie, I share your excitement. I'm a huge Broadway nerd and I love In the Heights. I've never seen the stage show, but I know the music. And so I'm very excited for the movie.
Excellent.
I cannot wait. Linda Surovich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Mine kind of ties into like what we were talking about how the Mets always seem to go viral in spring training for like most pure reasons imaginable. First it was Yorme catching the bat, like just nonchalant, like whatever. Then it was them mic'd up last year and just being like goofballs on the field and just letting their personality shine. And then this year it was the 27 out celebration. It was Yorme's bat again. So it's just, you know, it's nice knowing that we just have a fun group of guys that understand it's a game and, you know, obviously they're professionals, but it is a game and it just makes them so easy to root for. And, you know, even Taiwan Walker, when he got the necklace, he said, I'm going to wear it because the fans want me to. And so even that, like they have, it seems like they have this such a connection with the fans and they care. And that's, you know, after, like we said, it was a whirlwind off season after a bad season last year. It's just fun. And to have hope again and to, you know, have excitement around this team that's been lacking for a long time. So that's my walk-off win. It's just the excitement around the team and the fun around the team.
2 years in a row of Dom Smith being like utterly silly, yes, being mic'd up is awesome. Like I remember last year, obviously he had his snafu where he couldn't hear anybody. And so he's just like, what's going on? Can't hear you guys. And that was hilarious. And then this year during the ESPN broadcast, he like was trying to prop the iPad up on a glove and it just like kept falling down. And he also
is that
just
the
like
Mets profile picture?
I think it might be. I don't know. But I just know that it was funny. And I was like, if this ESPN broadcast is going to be this annoying, at least this happened during it.
In the baseball world, falling in love with Dom, like knowing the Dom we know, like that's also been special. Like everybody should like know Dom and love Dom the way we do.
I agree. So my walk-off win for this week is that on Friday, Michael and I went out for beers, and it was the first time I had eaten or drank outdoors since October.
Wow.
So I was just very excited to, like, leave the apartment for something that wasn't, like, grocery shopping or just, like, picking up food for curbside pickup. I was like, wow, like, the little things that are, like, really exciting life events now is just, like, going to get beers. I was very excited. So that's one part of my walk-off win, and I have another, like, I have two this week. My mom got her first vaccine shot today.
Yay!
So I'm very happy about that. So that was really great news. We had been stressing out about getting her an appointment for weeks and weeks and weeks, and she said she was looking at the websites every day, and I was like, Mom, you gotta refresh them like every hour, I'm telling you. And so she finally got her appointment, so she got her first vaccine today. She's doing good, she's recovering, she says she has no side effects so far, so I'm very excited. All of my like at-risk relatives are at least partially, if not wholly vaccinated, so that's good. still waiting on my dad. My dad went with her, like he drove her to the appointment to kind of be like, I wonder if there are any shots that they're going to throw out, because I've heard these stories of people that get it. And they didn't even let him in the building. They were like, get lost, pal.
We know what you're here for.
Get lost, buddy. Because my dad's not eligible yet, but my mom is. So, yeah, so that's just very exciting, just seeing more and more vaccine allocation. Yay, science. Yay, vaccines. Very exciting. So yeah, that does it for the show this week. Thank you so much, Disha, for coming on. We really appreciate it. Tell our listeners where they can find you on the internet and where they can find your writing.
Yeah, of course. And thanks for having me on. They can find me on Twitter at Disha Thosar, or Instagram at Dishtho, and of course, New York Daily News, /sports/baseball/Mets.
Fantastic. Thank you, Disha. You can follow this show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can also follow Amazing Avenue, our wonderful parent site, on all of social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servich.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
I was like, Maggie dropped off. No, she didn't. She said.
Oh. Maggie162.
You can follow each of us on Twitter. Follow Disha on Twitter and read her writing over at the New York Daily News. Please rate and review the podcast and subscribe to the podcast on your podcast app of choice. It really helps other people find it. The original intro and outro music to the show is by Bunga. Let's go, Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in the